Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm John Healy. I am the chief executive at Wur.Work, but also a member of the gig economy. So I handle a couple different projects simultaneously. One includes representation as a vice president at the World Employment Confederation, where I chair their blockchain task force.
Well, John, you got your hands full, and I appreciate you making time for us on Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk about all the exciting projects that you're leading, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Cool, John. Hey, and happy to be here. First off, thanks for giving me the opportunity, and thanks for your audience for being here. So 30 years in the staffing industry, spent 27 with Kelly, managed a variety of different things from frontline roles through to global roles to being seconded into leading services procurement for a mining customer of ours. And finished up there leading the Office for the Future of Work. And since then, have been consulting in the marketplace, helping people kind of understand how to look at the way to engage open talent in very different ways.
Well, that's super exciting. And I definitely want to capitalize on that 30-year experience in staffing in the talent acquisition space, because it's such a pertinent topic, especially in the last couple of years. I've been interviewing folks from all levels of organization, and that's been predominant in terms of the winning the war for talent, war on retention. So very excited about this conversation. You and I briefly touched upon kind of the open talent in our previous conversation, and you had an interesting case study, some numbers on NASA specifically. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, the overall concept of the open talent, and how can organizations basically take advantage of that?
Yeah, it's fun. I'll give full credit to a gentleman by the name of John Windsor. He's the executive in residence at the Laboratory for Innovation Sciences at Harvard. And John's the one who, Open Assembly is the group that he established, started really looking into things. And kind of the macro sense was that the way people are engaging talent is broken. So if we come from a belief of that, and that there's ways to improve it, whether you want to talk about democratizing access to work, or you want to talk about the gig economy or freelancers or total talent or talent supply chain, lots of different words out there. But in essence, organizations struggling to figure things out. And what John kind of got me on was when he gave me this case study that came out of NASA. So the US Space Agency, about 17,000 full-time employees. Sounds good. Okay, that's a solid population there. They've got 50,000 contract workers. So good that they know the size of that workforce. And you start, you know, first people start questioning, oh, that's a lot of contractors versus full-time employee. Okay, that's how they're set up. But then when you look at how NASA is solving problems, they have documented ideas from 110 million global citizens. And so when you start asking a question of how are you going to solve this problem, we've got this big issue that we've got to do. Do you want to turn to that 17,000? Do you want to turn to the 50,000 or the 67,000 known workers? Or do you want to tap into the minds of the world? And that's what really kind of got my mind triggered in exploring this market of open talent in a different way and really starting to look at some of the organizations out there. And it's not just NASA, it's Deloitte. If you read, there's case studies that have been published on their Pixel organization that they created internally, and Expertify, one of the platform businesses that they invested into to find data scientists and start really exploring how they could change the way that they brought data scientists into their organization, radically speeding up that timeline for a very, very difficult skill set to find. So you see them doing things, or you look at GE and what they did with Genius Link of kind of tapping into their internal workforce and then using that to then make their internal workforce accessible to their external customers. And you start finding that there are organizations out there who have found a secret sauce to reinvent themselves. You know, digital transformation is easy to talk about, but using talent, using asset allocation, you know, any corporate strategic planning function that you go through, we start deciding, okay, where are we going to put our assets? Which part of the business? Where are we going to put things in? But I haven't seen many organizations who have looked at asset allocation with their talent strategy and start saying, where do we need to really plug in our strongest assets? Where can we bring in unique assets to the organization to help accelerate the growth and push things forward? And so a lot of time being spent in this open talent marketplace, open innovation marketplace, looking at whether it's crowdsourcing, it's engaging your internal workforce to engage into gig workers, or anywhere in that spectrum in between. There's some really cool models that are emerging into the market.
Yeah, those are definitely very compelling statistics that you share, on, especially the case study on NASA. That's definitely a very exciting space. And I would imagine that, you know, magnifies that even further as we, you know, the environment we all deal with, you know, with the hybrid models, with the fully virtual, and organizations try to structure their, you know, overall setup with, you know, with the plans either to bring the workforce back to the offices or whatever the case may be. It's definitely interesting space that we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about this. You've mentioned also, shifting gears a little bit, that you're leading a blockchain task force, which is very, you know, for selfish reasons, the cryptocurrency space is very, very interesting to me. Especially, you know, in the last few years that we've seen such a tremendous growth in this space. Tell us a little bit more about the trends that you're mostly excited about in this space, and how do some of these technologies really, you know, translate to how organizations maybe hire, maybe how they retain talent. So just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I think that the whole Web 3.0 marketplace is fascinating. It's introducing some very different ways to do things. I think what's a little bit scary, and that the techie in us have to be cautious about, is when we start talking crypto and we start talking blockchain, there is an immediate apprehension that you see from a lot of people in the marketplace. It's maybe a step too far from where they've gone. But if you start looking at some of the tools that we use in our everyday life and realize the foundational aspect of what they're built on, you start seeing some extreme value. So, you know, think of the digital wallets we're all using today. You know, your COVID vaccination, you've got to have that with you. It's got to be portable from one to another. Think of having that be able to move from, you know, the whether it's a Walgreens or a CVS that you went to, into your healthcare provider, into the airport that you got to fly with. How do I make it much easier for that information to move, but move within my control? And that starts thinking about the difference in the tools that are out there. So where does that apply to work? Well, if you think about when COVID hit, we had in the US alone, and we can mirror this in any other markets, but you know, 30 million jobs lost, boom. And in many of the same sectors, or in many sectors that needed the same type of workers, there was expansion. So the hospitality sector, we'll take as an example, completely shut down. No one can go, you know, Disney World's closed down. We can't go to any of the theme parks, anything we want to do. But we suddenly had all these vaccination sites that needed people to get us through there with good customer service skills, help us move through and process. And the ability to move the worker from one location to the other was completely compromised because of these analog processes that we ran, or the bureaucracy that said, oh, I need to do a new background check. We need to go get that done. And I need to verify this, or I need to verify that, as opposed to having an individual who could pull out their digital wallet and with it be able to share with you their credentials of what they have and what they work through. So through the World Employment Confederation, that's where I've got the chief digital officers or the CIOs from a series of large organizations, primarily in the private employment industry, who have said, you know, the information that we gather and collect and process when someone comes and applies for a job, whose information is that? Is that our property, or is that the property of the worker? And the aha for the group came together when everyone acknowledged that's the property of the individual, of the worker. But that's not how we've been set up. So how can we evolve as an industry to start making it a much more seamless process for individuals to gain access to work and to speed the process up. If we can take 2 weeks out of the timeframe it takes for an individual to go from the point of needing work to receiving a paycheck, we'll also speed up productivity. So the company going from "I needing work done" to "I'm getting work done" inside the organization, will also be able to help governments stop paying out social welfare for individuals who are being impacted. So the wellness implications start hitting all over the place. So it's something that, you know, it strikes a personal passion chord for me of making a difference in the world. But I think the tools and the technology that's out there right now really offer some opportunity that we haven't seen in the market in a long, long time.
I want to pull the thread a little bit further on the overarching theme of connecting talent with growth and innovation, more specifically developing highly talented teams and a strong culture with passion for winning while treating each other the right way, obviously. You spend a good deal of time talking and writing about concepts as enterprise enablement and passion economy. Share further on some of these pragmatic solutions with us.
Well, I think that there's a lot in there. I think so much of this gets to purpose. You know, we've reached a stage. A lot of the research I did was about consumer behavior. And, you know, as consumers, we no longer tolerate a bad experience. You know, if you order something online from a provider and you have a bad experience, the odds of going back to that provider are pretty low, unless they have exceptional customer service. Zappos stood out in what they did there, and it kept them in business for a long period of time. Amazon goes out of their way to make it a good experience for you if something goes wrong. FedEx had their purple promise to make sure that you had a good experience. We don't tolerate a bad experience as a consumer. Yet at work, if we have a bad experience, how long are we going to tolerate it? How long are you going to stay in that situation? If my phone can be so personalized to me and the feed that comes in, the algorithms are giving me exactly what I want. But when we go to our intranet, everyone's looking at the exact same thing, from the frontline, you know, sanitation worker to the CEO, are all seeing the exact same information. There's something kind of wrong with that. So, you know, I think what we're seeing as a market is that we expect purpose in why I come to work every day. I'm not going to tolerate if that's not there. I'm going to accept lower pay or different working conditions if I feel good about the purpose of what's there. So that's going to, you know, invigorate the passion that I have about what I'm doing, which is going to extend the level of engagement I have. It's been proven to extend the value of the productivity that I bring to the table. And so it's a push to see organizations start looking at that. What it also starts triggering is some real questions about a couple of the words, and you even use them. Acquisition. There's a linguist in me somewhere that's hidden. It was never properly educated, but, you know, I don't know about you, but I didn't want to be acquired. And that kind of sounds wrong. And then once I'm acquired, I want to be retained. That sounds a little bit unhealthy. If you want to push to an end, kind of sounds like slavery, is where you've heard those terms out there. And so I think we've got a system that is so broken in even the words that we use around it, that it needs some radical reform, that we need to think about, you know, the engagement of a worker and the engagement of people and pulling their passion out, getting the most of them, but understanding that may not mean that I own and control you as a worker, but rather I utilize you when it's efficient for you, when it fits what your needs are. And so what we've seen certainly through COVID is I don't want to be bound to 9 to 5, sitting at the desk with you monitoring keystrokes to see whether or not you think I'm being productive, but I want the freedom and flexibility to execute the work that's there. So you have a lot of organizations still struggling today to define, you know, what is the value of the work that you're doing? How do I measure productivity? You know, if you're not in a pure output-driven area, you know, measuring the lines of code, it's not really telling me whether or not you've contributed value to the organization. All those things are forcing organizations to rethink their talent strategy. How many full-time employees? When do I use a gig worker that may, you know, it's one client, he said, you know, they think of it as almost like using precious metal, that, you know, I'm going to bring it in for finite periods of time when I need it for something special. And then I'll work with the core workforce to get other things done. So I think that there's this pause that needs to take place to really say there's a better way to do things, understanding what worker expectations are, and rethinking about how we can accomplish work differently in today's market versus just saying, oh, you're remote now. That's not really changing what we're trying to do.
Right. And those are very interesting observations, and something as simple as, you know, the everyday terminology that we use, you know, such as talent acquisition, you don't really pay attention to some of the, you know, just overall the concept of that. But you're absolutely right when it comes to just, you know, acquiring the talent and then retaining. It does have very, you know, interesting connotations to this that oftentimes are overlooked, but that has a lot of downstream, you know, implications just overall the way, you know, organizations treat and, you know, handle the most precious, I guess, the asset that they have is the workers that they employ. So those are definitely interesting observations. You've been in staffing for quite some time, even in your previous career. One space that always fascinates me, which I find it very challenging, and I still see a lot of opportunity for growth, is I'm talking about interviewing, because is a lot of the interviews are based on that past personal experience, where there's so much emphasis on what is the weakness that I can tolerate in that particular candidate versus what are the strengths that are missing on my team? And can that particular candidate fill that void? Yeah. Share your thoughts on that. How can interviewing be improved just overall? Because, you know, setting those right expectations, and I would imagine you have those conversations with some of your client companies when it comes to that very initial conversation.
Yeah, this is one where I think you have to include the technology aspect into it to start getting it right. And some of the research that we had done back when I was at Kelly that really impressed me in kind of the depth that we got to was the importance of separating match from fit. And I'll explain it a little bit. So match is about your capability to do a job. Do you have the requisite skills needed to do that work? In nursing, an ER nurse or an OR nurse, it's a very specific certification that you have. Even driving a forklift, very specific certification. Welding, do you have that? So we have good clarity around match in many areas. There are many that we don't have clarity of match. So I think it's Lumina Foundation has identified 800,000 different certifications that exist in the market. That's made it very difficult for people to understand, okay, I see that they've got this little certificate or a degree, but does that mean that they can do the job? So it requires me to do the interview. Now I need to validate things. So we're missing a trust element that's in there. And I think you have some organizations that are really working through a company like Credential Engine, helping to kind of validate that, you know, what you call ABC and I call 123 is exactly the same thing. So with match, technology is going to help us. It already has, and I think it'll continue to help us get a lot better at making sure that I know you have the technical competency to do the work that's there, whatever that work is. Fit is about whether or not this is right for you. This is about the human element of what's there. And I think as the technology allows us to have more confidence in the match part of it, we can spend more time on fit. And that's where I get to understand culturally, is this going to be the right environment for you? In the growth trajectory, the opportunities that I can give you in the go forward, does that match what you want to do? Or is that just not something that interests you? And if we can spend more time focusing on that fit part of things, I think that we'll see that the marriage, if you will, of people coming together is a whole lot better. that we see greater bonds that are there. We see people engaged, and some people will say, hey, I just want to be a gig worker. That's all I need for you right now. Someone else will say, I need a full-time employee job because I need access to benefits. We're going to have a family. I'll have young kids. I need access to that. The healthcare system's still not, you know, giving me access to everything that I need. Fine. I need time off. I've got an elderly parent to take care of. My kids are homeschooled because of what we're going through right now. I need flexibility in my schedule. Can we understand those capabilities? Because if we get there and you and I are able to connect on a human level, the odds of the skill part coming together improves. And candidly, the skills end up having to evolve over time anyways. So, you know, the half-life of your existing skills we know is going to come down. And so you're going to have to evolve those skills along the way. So I tend to look for, you know, the fit part, and I tend to look for the learning competency. Do you have a curiosity on an ongoing basis of wanting to learn? Because if that's not there, odds of whether the skill match that you have today is going to be good for the long term is pretty low, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's, you know, making that investment, whether that's, you know, technology, time, or resources to be able to determine at least certain indicators of that potential fit, oftentimes it's overlooked and undervalued, unfortunately. I see that a lot in different organizations where it's just too much focus on, you know, just bringing as much talent as possible to the organization without investing further into identifying that potential fit, which has a lot more downstream effects in terms of the longer term relationship and just well-being of the worker, which are very interesting observations that you make.
You have a cultural thing going on too, and you have to recognize where you are in the supply demand equation. Yep. If you're trying to gain access to talent that is in limited supply, yep, and in high demand, mm-hmm, understand that your process shouldn't be set up for screening out. It needs to be set up for screening in.
Yep.
So we've got to be willing to think a little bit differently when we recognize those situations.
I love that screening out versus screening in. And I think those are just basic concepts, but at the same time, they, you know, underrepresented, especially when it comes to such a complex space of talent, you know, just attracting the top talent to your organizations. And I recently got, you know, a note from one of the executives I interviewed on the podcast as well, which resonated on so many levels, which I completely overlooked that aspect of, you know, thought leaders like yourself coming on to platforms such as the podcast and talking about their values, leadership styles, the culture that they're building at organizations. Usually that resonates a lot more in potential candidates versus reading something on the About Us section of the company website. So those are just some of the intrinsic little, you know, the elements that really contribute to be able to kind of build that, you know, winning culture at an organization. I find that fascinating. John, the last round that we usually have on the podcast is kind of the rapid fire where we ask the question and just get your immediate thoughts on that. And we usually do quite a few polls from our listeners and the audience in terms of the types of questions to ask. So I would love to kind of for you to do that exercise with you as well. With so much experience and, you know, just knowledge base you've built throughout all these years in staffing and recruiting, what is your content diet looking like? What are the sources that you consume yourself to keep yourself educated on all the things that are going on in your industry, things that are maybe, you know, from forecasting perspective? Just share with us that.
Yeah, content, I change constantly. That's one thing I found early in my career. I couldn't let it get stale. So blogs, Rashad Tabakawala, if you've not seen him, he's one of my favorite blogs that's going out. Get your Sunday input coming in. Very good in what's there. Books. I am a reading fiend, and I cheat. I see your podcast ahead of time, so I came prepared. I've got what I do. Excellence in People Analytics. I find as just it's a great book. David Green does some great things on it, but real case studies. That's what I love about that reading piece that I'm diving into. And I'm still really big on Machine Platform Crowd by Andrew McAfee. I think that's one that really helps you think differently about this new age that we're entering into. Adaptive Space by Michael Arena. Great as you want to think about moving from a hierarchical structure into a network structure and what the importance and the value points are within your network. Some really cool stuff there. And then my new one is Beyond Collaboration Overload, because I feel the overload of collaboration and how many people we've got to talk to, and how do we get through it? How do we keep people engaged, but how do we find where those stop points are? So blogs, books, classes, OpenExo. If you haven't been out there, think about the Exponential Organization. Or right now I'm taking a class through Harvard's Business Analytics Program, their Startup Academy. Just because I find it to be really fun to think about the different ways startups need to be looking at things in today's market. And then if you want a really fun one, you want to push yourself, Clubhouse is the new one that I've gone on to. So audio, so it's purely audio, but I've been using it for getting to know Web 3.0 and NFTs and crypto. I've just found like a really open community of people that will just share anything. So my content palette is highly diversified and constantly on the move.
Well, I love it. Well, you just killed it with that answer. Obviously, you came prepared. And I think a lot of the book recommendations and the sources you listed will make those available in the show notes so that people definitely can check that out. In terms of, you mentioned books, and just like yourself, usually, you know, over the holidays, the favorite gift for me is always I just Amazon and just ship books to all of my friends, my family, and all of that. That's just my favorite thing to do. If you were to choose one book that you always recommend to others, I mean, at least in current times, which one would that be and why?
Machine Platform Crowd. I think the part of it that really got me, and it's been on my shelf for several years. But if you think of the Industrial Revolution, and we all know about, you know, when the electric motor replaced the steam engine in Industry 2.0, and that big shift that we all went through, so many people that replaced their steam engine and put that motor in, they got nothing in value out of it. They took a big clunky thing and they put a small efficient thing in. And it just makes me think of all the RPA that we have going on today. Got a big ugly process and I automated it. It wasn't until Henry Ford and others said, wait a minute, what this technology allows me to do is to rethink the way work is getting done. And that's when the assembly line was created. That's when new value was created. I think today we are still stuck in replacing bad things with automation. So when we think about a digital business, it's just automating bad stuff. So we're producing crap fast. That's not a good thing. That's the book that caused me to really do some pausing and thinking about, you know, where do you need to slow down in order to speed up and really extract the value out of the opportunity that's in front of us.
Oh, then you're going to love the book that I'm going to send to you right after this podcast. It's called Competing in the Age of AI. It's by one of my HBS professors, Lakshmi, and it's just a fascinating read of, you know, just overall organizational capacity and the strategies, you know, just being able to compete in this whole age of AI. So it definitely resonates with the book that you're recommending. John, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Lots of great insights, very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the guests on the Ivy podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything that we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. Those are usually a lot of fun. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Excellent, John. I sincerely look forward to that. We're at a time that a lot is changing, and it's time to make sure we change it for good.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.